You're listening to the Corporate Expat Experience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm your host, Nicole Caldwell. Thank you so much for being here. Today, we're going to talk about something that I have so many questions on all the time. It's about raising money, getting that capital to start your business or to scale up in your business. And today, I am bringing you an expert in this. I'm so excited to introduce to you Kat Weaver, co-founder of Power to Pitch. Kat, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I am so excited. I have to admit, I'm a huge fan of your work and really excited to get into the topic of capital, raising money, pitching, the whole thing. So give us a quick intro about yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Sure. So I like to say I'm a two-time accidental founder. I started my first company literally out of my college dorm room. No network or know-how, but ended up winning 22 of 23 pitches to help fund that first company because that was my only means of survival per se. It wasn't something I was naturally good at, but I worked my butt off to get there. And then those opportunities allowed me to do retail and Amazon and even Good Morning America 4 times. And on the side, FedEx had posted my top pitch tips on their YouTube channel and went viral. So I was coaching founders on the side on how to get money and get into retail. And it really took off. And one day my husband looked at me and said, "You take that inventory and you burn it out back because, woman, you got to be pitching." And I'm like, okay, I can't do that after all these years. And so I ended up actively selling and exiting the company after 6 years to start what is now Power to Pitch with the whole mission of helping founders get funded faster.
That is amazing. How did you even know how to get into this and to start pitching and starting a business? I mean, you were in college when you did this, right?
Yes, I actually wanted to go into medicine. So I was taking organic chemistry classes while I was doing this, while I was playing tennis and working on emailing manufacturers while I was in class. So I was trying to juggle it all and had absolutely no idea what I was doing, but I had a professor tell me. So back up a little bit, I had started making the products that I first created in my mom's bridal store, and she actually lost her store to a fire of 26 years.
Oh, wow.
Not only did she lose her business, all of my stuff was in there, and it was literally, I was at pure zero from just barely starting even on Etsy. And my professor was like, "You can't give up. You got people knocking on your dorm room door, you know?" And I thought, you know, okay, what the heck? And the first pitch competition I went to, I was so nervous and nauseous that I wanted to leave. But the only reason I stayed was because my parents drove up to see me. And so I was so close to chickening out, but I ended up winning $7,500 that I didn't have to pay back and got to purely put towards the business to get it up and running again. And then I started to search for pitch competitions and grant opportunities because I didn't really understand what venture was. I didn't understand what even an angel investor was. And I definitely wasn't in a position to give up equity either. So I'm glad I actually didn't have too close of resources for it. But now more than ever, I think there are so many incredible grant opportunities for founders to get started. And we want to make that education and opportunity more accessible for them.
That is amazing. I am so wowed by what you've done because I know so many people out there, they're wanting to start a business. They have an idea or they've kind of slowly started and now they're like, I need capital. I mean, because this is the biggest thing for a business. You've got to have capital, whether you are self-funding and you're bootstrapping or you're going to go after the big venture capital dollars or, you know, but there's other routes too. And I love that you talk about grants so much because I think that is the unsung hero of the raising world.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of founders see all the trendy Forbes and TechCrunch articles that, oh, this founder raised this much million and this much and this much. And it's way overhyped, I would say, because 1% of companies in the US actually secure venture dollars. Then 1.6% of that 1% goes to women. 0.13% goes to Black founders, and then 0.013 goes to Native American founders. So it's an extremely tough industry and the odds are not in a founder's favor, honestly. So if they're looking, if you're pre-revenue, you're super early, grants are a really great way to start using personal funds because you have to get gritty at the end of the day. If you're not willing to sacrifice, it's never going to happen. And then there's, you know, family and friends, if you're lucky enough, who support you early in the journey. There's also revenue and debt-based financing options. And we just kind of talked about this, where debt doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad or you're not successful. Debt is actually cheaper than equity, and giving up equity to an investor is like a marriage. So that's a relationship that should be cultivated over time. You don't want to accept every investor check that comes at you. It's something that should be vetted and curated and isn't going to happen after one meeting, usually, most of the time. So there's a lot of options for founders. You do have to get creative, from credit cards to talking to your bank, building a relationship with your banker. There's plenty of options before going the scary venture route, which is something we focus on. We have a whole fundraising program that helps founders raise between $500,000 and $3 million on average. And then privately, we support $3 to $10 million raises, but it is not for everyone. And we only take on 10% of founders who actually apply to that program.
Not everyone needs to go after that kind of money. I mean, you have to have money to get started. Absolutely. You can bootstrap, and there's a beauty to bootstrapping, I think. I was talking to a founder the other day who said, I'm redoing my whole website. And he said, actually, I'm so happy that I didn't spend a ton of money that was recommended to me in the beginning on creating a website, because we've had so many changes in our messaging and our branding and everything that it's not a huge loss to me. So there's a value and beauty in bootstrapping, but not everybody has to raise the big money coming in. And I think that's where I've talked to a lot of people who are really scared off the bat to get involved, because they think they have to go raise in that fashion.
And two, the point of a raise and dealing with investors is, investors aren't donating to your cause. They want to make money and you should be making money. So it is a mutual benefit. It should be a mutual benefit. And they're the ones taking the risk. But if you want to pass down the business to your family, or you want to grow it for 20 years, you should not be going after venture dollars. If you want to go after venture, the expectation is that you exit and get acquired in 5 to 7, maybe even 10 years, but the sooner the better. That's why there's the hype around like the hockey stick growth. That's what a lot of investors are looking for. They know that your projections and things like that are guesses, but it's with the whole expectation that you will exit and be acquired in the near future.
Yeah. And you are signing a marriage contract, essentially. So you have to be aware of who you're working with. I mean, on both sides, right? It has to be a good fit on both sides. But to your point, I mean, it depends on what your business goals are and your exit strategy to whether that's the right route for you or not.
Yes. And so one thing too, when you brought up the investment in a website, I want to touch on the amount of founders that come to us and say, I want you to build me a pitch deck. And this is actually the least important thing you could possibly do if you're planning to raise. So if you'd set up that, okay, you have something proprietary, you're going to be high growth, you want to get acquired, you want to go after venture dollars, great. Now, when you're preparing to have conversations and build relationships with investors, it is not actually about the deck. So we, in our fundraising program, focus on a founder's language and the order in which they say things first. So we go through almost a pitch script and a cadence, and we poke holes in that, help a founder organize it, because we've actually helped founders raise money without even using a pitch deck. So yes, investors will ask about it, but a DocSend stat is that the average deck gets scanned in less than 90 seconds. So no one's actually going through it. And when you're live, you don't want it to take away from you. You should be the hero. And we say a lot that, you know, investors are buying into you before what you do. And I partnered with an amazing woman who spent 25 years in finance, and she's an active angel investor in 19 companies. So it's not only my perspective, she's also has this exact same mindset when we're supporting founders. So a pretty pitch deck is not going to solve problems. It's not going to purely secure the money. And then if you're going to someone to pay, you know, we've literally had founders go and pay someone 5 to 10K plus for one single pitch deck. It is the most ludicrous thing you could do, because you have to be nimble in updating a deck, especially at the pre-seed and seed stages, which is your typically early stage, you're typically under a few million in revenue or that amount of money raised, early stages of product and growth. You should not be putting that kind of money towards this temporary thing that is not actually going to move the needle for you. And I don't know why it's so common, but we really try to talk about it a lot to educate and show that it's the focus should be on the opposite of that.
I talked to a startup about 2 years ago that had spent $25,000 on a pitch deck that they could not edit. And I said, but okay, what do you mean you can't edit it? Well, we only have the PDF. And I said, okay, we can break that, but why would you invest something that you have to be nimble? Like you said, things change, numbers change, your situation changes. Building a strong foundation has always been the thing that I've focused on with a business. And I think what I'm hearing you say too, it's not so much about the actual document, the pitch deck, but it's getting your foundation of your story, your business in place to be able to articulate and to communicate effectively.
Yeah. And investors are, at the end of the day, especially in early stages, they're betting on you. They're kind of betting on the horse, because you have to think, if you were to pivot or something bad were to happen, do you have the grit, coachability, stamina, transparency, and passion to push through those issues and do right by their money? Because again, they're probably not going to get that back if something happens. So they want you to succeed in order to make a 5, 10, 100x return on their potential investment. So it's you before what you do. That's a lot of what we preach in our program.
I think if you put yourself in the investor's shoes, and I know you and I both make investments, I look at, who am I investing in? What am I investing in? And yes, the return on investment. Absolutely. Would you say that's about accurate?
Yeah. So four traits that we actually screen for, not only in our program, but in my personal angel investing thesis, is that we want a founder to be coachable, gritty, passionate, and transparent. If they are not all four of those things, we won't put them through their program, and I probably won't have another conversation with them. We'll have even founders say that, oh, no, I am coachable. I am coachable. But they've been combative, or they don't want to share things, or they think they're all knowing. Not that I'm all knowing by any means, but if you're not willing to have a conversation about things or take a bird's eye view or perspective to a thing that you're maybe having issues on and hasn't been solved yet, you know, obviously that's going to be a red flag in the future. But also, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. Funny enough, is that I really love athletes as founders. So I played tennis in college, and I think that the sacrifice that an athlete goes through to manage all of those things from, you know, whether it be school or friends, relationships, you have to be so focused and determined. And not that the average person who was an athlete doesn't have that, but I think that athletes are at a next tier in terms of grit. So that's something I really like. And if I see a founder who's been a previous athlete, they're kind of go towards the top of my list, but that's just a personal thing.
Well, it's so true. The grit, like you said, but also the discipline that comes into being in sports when you're in those elevated, especially like when you're in college sports or your pro sports, right? Or semi-pro, there's discipline there. And I look at that too, from the investments that I make, I look at, you know, former corporates, because there were some disciplines, some rigor, some best practices that they've been exposed to generally that can make a big difference. Not everyone, but it definitely plays into that as well. And I think those are the things that investors are looking at. When you go back to the grants in particular, because that's, I know, a place where you thrive and you've excelled. What are some things that you think that make a difference when going after these grants?
So the number one thing is a founder should actually focus on creating a really, really solid and tight elevator pitch, which is between 30 to 60 seconds. So 99% of grants I applied for asked for one. We require it in our program. And if it is optional, air quote, in an application, that means that it's actually required. And they will push aside applications who didn't put forth the extra effort. It's actually a test. So I've chosen FedEx grant winners before, and they will not spend time on the people who did not make the extra effort in this application. So another thing is that a very clear ask. So the majority of the time, the grant, the organization putting on a grant, now the enterprise level grants are between, let's say, $500 to $250,000 on average. They're not government level, which is very different. Right. But on the enterprise level, it's about the organization putting on the grant. It's not about the founder. It's not about the business. It's how you're going to represent the person or organization sponsoring it. So it's partially selfish, but the whole point is that there's PR, marketing, networking. That is actually more value than the dollar associated with the grant itself. So for example, when I did I won the FedEx grant years ago. I was one of their youngest winners ever. It was one of the most incredible opportunities of my entire life. I still remember every bit of it to this day. They flew us out to Memphis. We got to meet strategic people. We got to meet C-suite people. I serve on their advisory board. I network with the other grant winners. I got services. I've been on their website. I'm in their marketing material. I'm in their Facebook ads. The PR from that way goes over the dollar amount that I got. Granted, it's super helpful, but it's really more about the person putting on the grant. And then when someone's applying, the next biggest thing I would say, it's the biggest mistake, is people aren't clear on their ask and use of funds. So let's say the grant is $10,000. It's not about you're raising a million, and it's not about $10,000 just going towards inventory, and it's really, really, really going to help your business. That means absolutely nothing. So the more specific someone can be, the more confidence it's going to give the person essentially giving away the grant at the end of the day. And the best part about grant money is you don't pay it back. It is not a loan. It is check in the mail usually, or a direct ACH transfer into your bank account, which is such a beautiful thing. So the 2 hours or so you spend on a $10,000 grant, that's $5,000 an hour. A $5,000 grant, who doesn't want $2,500 an hour? Like, those are pretty good odds and time well spent, and it helps organize the business. So we always encourage founders, like, even if you don't win, it is always worth applying.
I love that you put it into perspective like that. And in fact, you were on a panel that I was in the audience for. And when you said that, you told a story about your dad, how he encouraged you on one and kind of broke it down in hours. Tell that story, because it really sinks in and resonates, and it really puts things into perspective.
Yeah. So I think a lot of founders get lazy. And I know, because I was at that point where you're tired and you see all the same pretty similar questions. And I'm like, where did I put that last application? And it was a $5,000 grant. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to apply for this. It takes 2 hours. And he looked at me, goes, are you out of your mind? You sit your butt in that chair and you're going to make $2,500 an hour. Do you make that now? Absolutely not. So who wouldn't want that? And then I did end up securing $5,000. So it was a pretty good return. And it maybe actually took me closer to an hour and a half to do it. Not even the full 2 hours that I projected. And it was an amazing opportunity. So you never know until you try. And same with the FedEx one. I applied. It was due at 11:59 at night. And I will never forget, I'm sitting in my bed with the lights off, my computer in my face. I'm laying back typing in, and I'm one eye closed because I'm so tired. And 10 minutes before the deadline, I'm like, oh, what the heck? Why not? I don't know what's going to happen. And then I get a call a few weeks later, you've been selected, and chills run up your body because you're like, oh my God, I wasn't even expecting something like that. So it's always worth a shot. And we actually created our whole grant program because in our fundraising program, like I said, we only accept 10%. We were turning away so many founders who maybe weren't ready or even VC backable, which again, there's nothing wrong with that, but there's so many other funding opportunities from debt and revenue based financing to grants. So we brain dump and we have a whole education side of things for founders to be able to understand that, see before and after examples of grants, what the good, bad, ugly looks like. And then we share 1 to 200 grants every single month.
That's amazing. And, you know, there's also value in not winning too. And I think that's something that people are really scared to go after these things because they think I won't win. And it's okay if you don't win, because I think that exercises that muscle. And if you keep at it, that's the grit, the tenacity, and keep going, you're going to eventually get something back.
Yeah, the thing is too, is you can always ask for feedback. Not, for example, in FedEx, so 10,000 plus people apply every single year. So you're not going to get feedback from them, and that's totally okay. But it's worth asking or saying, hey, I'm still looking for support in X, Y, and Z areas as X type of founder. Do you know someone or an organization who could help me? That is one of the best things that you could do for your company. And then even saying that, let's say you made the finals of it or you didn't win, post about it on social media. That's still some PR and marketing you can get out of it. And then you've started to organize the business. Let's say it's 20 questions and you had to answer about your competition, business model, things. You get the opportunity to reevaluate and see where you can do better. Save those answers for the next one to be able to build off of it. So there's really no negative to going for it. Granted, you have to read the stipulations. Don't waste your time if you don't check all the boxes, but why not?
Why not? And just ask. I love that, that you say, you know, ask for some feedback. I mean, the worst they could say is no or not respond, but you might get some very valuable feedback that could help you for the next grant or help your business in a different way too.
I had a friend who totally, this is probably not the right thing to do, but berated the grant. The person reviewing the grants was like, please, 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 I'm begging for feedback. I've applied to so many. I just need to know, need to know. I don't know how many times they emailed this person and they ended up becoming an advisor later on. So
you never know.
Never know, the grit, the tenacity, it goes a long way.
One of the things that you touched on though is the money's important. Yes. I mean, the money's a great thing, but it's that, I'll say, post-investment support that comes from the grants in particular that is so incredibly valuable. What were some things you touched on a little bit? What are some things that really stood out for you that made a huge difference or led you to something else, another advancement in your business?
Well, the money would allowed me to get through bigger chunks of inventory. So if I didn't win those grants, I would have actually never been able to afford to do Good Morning America. So that was one thing. The pitching skills and practice that I did also supported me through that. And like I mentioned before with FedEx, I got to meet their executive team. I ended up co-logoing my product to put in the FedEx stores, and it was gifted at events. So they put in POs worth thousands of dollars on top of me getting the grant to buy product. I promoted more that I co-logoed. I got the experience of what it was like to co-logo with a huge corporate partner. And then I was asked to serve on their advisory board and serve future entrepreneurs that applied. And we got to network and be a part of it together. And over the years, they flew to get all the winners together. And unfortunately, COVID happened, so they stopped doing it. But it was one of the most memorable experiences. And I could still text some of these people to this day. We're still friends. We're still talking about the same entrepreneur struggles. And I think that it helped me realize that there was such a common theme amongst a lot of the questions too. So when I was applying, I would save all those answers and realize, okay, these are actually the core fundamentals and core things that I really need to get right as I'm scaling my business. Granted, I didn't exit for $1 billion. I'm not on an island somewhere. I don't have all the answers. This isn't the end all be all, but I never got a corporate job. And it allowed me to avoid that, to be able to take this risk and scale the company and continue on to my next venture and now invest in others.
You know, that's an important thing, is it allowed you flexibility. It allowed you to do what you wanted to do and pursue the things you wanted to do and be in business for yourself. Now, you've always been in business for yourself. What are some things that you love about being an entrepreneur?
We all have our good and bad days. It is not all rosy. I am going to lead with that. Some days I just think, I wish someone would tell me what to do today for the love of God. Oh my gosh. And then other days I'm on top of the world. I went golfing in the morning and got to just work later, and I have flexibility. I went to Italy and got to work with one of my friends and have a flexible schedule. Like, absolutely incredible. So that's amazing. I think it's so empowering too. It is hard. It's very mental. Like, when I succeed or fail, it is because of me constantly. And I have that competitive athlete mindset still. I work out every single morning to just get my head right before even a work day kind of deal. So, and I work Monday through Sunday, but the flexibility is amazing. I think the impact of how much money we've been able to help founders secure up until this point. I now have an amazing business partner who's based in New York, who I get to share the same brain with on all of these things. So the autonomy of it, getting to build my own schedule, the connections that I have go far beyond anything that I could have potentially done in corporate. And I will never forget, I had a friend, I was sitting in my dorm room and I was debating whether or not to take the risk of, you know, do I live in my parents' basement and go full time? They're telling me not to. They're telling me I could get a great job somewhere with benefits. And I had a call with my friend. I'm like, I'm really torn about what to do because I think I have something here. And he said, Kat, do not get a job because you're going to be way too comfortable and you're never going to take that risk. And there was never a right time to jump in or feel like I was, you know, ready for anything. And he was right and he changed my life in that moment. But when I hear, we have a lot of, you know, founders who are still working their corporate jobs and being a founder at night. And we ask, are you prepared to leave your job if you get investment? Because an investor is going to want you all in. Right. And it's so scary to so many founders. So like, oh, I still need to work for a few years or this or this or this. And we're like, expect pushback. You're going to have issues because the investor is taking the risk. They want you to be fully committed. So there's never that right, perfect feeling moment number of like your actual dollar value in your bank account that is going to make you feel really truly prepared at the end of the day. So it's like, just jump head first really into everything.
That's so true, because there really never is a right time. It's almost like what people say about starting a family too. There's never really that right, perfect time. You've got to figure out what's important to you, what you want to do, and then go for it. And that is a misconception. A lot of people think that no, investors want to see me earning a paycheck and I'm doing this on the side. And it's like, actually, me as an investor, I want to know that they're all in, that they believe in this so much that they said, I'm going to, you know, leave that so that I can fully focus on this going forward to make it work and to make it happen.
Totally.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of people get, again, going back to getting nervous about how to get started, what money is available out there for me, how am I going to do this? But I think what you've shared today shows us that it's very doable. And that was one of my intentions with this podcast as a whole, was to show people examples, to show stories of people who've done it and have been successful, to share some of the failures and the mishaps and along the way, because it happens. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you is, kind of looking back over your career, what is something, some advice you would have given your early self, or something, you know, that you would tell yourself or new entrepreneurs to know about this entrepreneurial journey?
Well, I think I probably made it sound too easy as, oh, I won these pitches and this money, and oh, I exited the company and started another one. Now I help other people raise money. It was not this perfect uphill line. There was so much of a roller coaster, self-doubt, emotion, sadness, feeling like I'm not enough, I should quit. Before I sold my first company, I had one mentor who's no longer a mentor tell me, no, you should just sell your company for $1 and move on. Just move on. And I had never felt so infuriated in my whole life. I worked 6 years on this company. I was on Good Morning America. I had overseas manufacturers. I patented products. Like, there's something wrong here. And I think that I wish I knew sooner, and what something we tell founders now is, everything is negotiable, from suppliers to investors to your own mindset to your own schedule. It is, you're not going to have this perfect box and this perfect checklist. And everything someone comes to you with as you're scaling your business or you need something, you have to understand that you have negotiating power in making it right.
That's so true. I mean, everything is figure outable.
As hard and painful as it might be. And one to that, so Good Morning America, I was in my parents' basement, party of one, two part-time people. I was self-fulfilling. And I got the note that, hey, we want you featured. You have to have 10,000 units of inventory and be able to ship in 24 to 48 hours. And I damn near lost it. I went upstairs to my mom crying like a child. Like, I can't do this. I'm so sad. She goes, are you kidding me? This is the easy part. You go down there, you tell them you're going to do it, and we're going to figure it out. I was like, okay. And I ended up doing it four times, got into a warehouse, and it was so painful. And I needed someone else to realize that it was possible, because I sure as heck didn't. And it's like the little moments like that too, where that was another point of negotiation externally, internally, that led me to change my whole life.
Having that support network around you is one of the things that I think is the most important aspect of being an entrepreneur to be successful, is to have that network, to have those people that believe in you and to believe in yourself. We talked about being coachable. That's something that's super important, to have that entrepreneurial mindset. But that support, it will carry you through those difficult times when there are tears, and there will be tears. I don't care who you are.
Men, women. Someone told me the other day, this big burly guy who's raised a ton of money, he goes, you're not a founder if you haven't cried.
Okay, that's a great quote because it's so true. And you know, imposter syndrome comes in. Everyone, the greats get it. Everyone gets it. So I'm sure that's something too that, you know, having that network around you can really be helpful for when you have those moments of self-doubt, when you have the tears, all of that. And also having support in other ways, like your program. I'd like to talk a little bit about that because that too is another means of support that I think a lot of people aren't aware that they have these options and these amazing programs to help on the journey.
Yeah, sometimes we call it startup therapy because, you know, been there, done that. We know how hard it is. So we help founders in a couple different ways. A grant-specific program that any founder internationally, nationally can unlock and get the education and 1 to 200 grant opportunities, lifetime access per month. We want to make it accessible. And then when or if a founder is ready to fundraise, we'll credit the cost of that grant program toward their fundraising program. So we're with a founder until the last check of their current round comes in. We're the only program that does it. We don't take equity and we don't take a percent of their raise. So we're typically helping founders raise between $500,000 and $3 million. And we'll do private coaching for raises between 3 to 10 million. But it's industry agnostic. We want to make sure the founder has to have a validated MVP. We will turn away any founder who is not prepared to do so in those four qualities that I talked about earlier. We have an application call because we're essentially become an extension of the founder's team. We help them through to pitch documents, a deck, a one pager. We do potential Q&A. We poke them on their business model, go to market strategies. We'll do a mock investor call. And the end goal is that we'll directly connect them with investors in their industry.
That's amazing. And knowing that there is that kind of support out there that people can tap into, I think really helps to make this more real and more accessible. Kat, I could talk to you forever about all of this. We've had such great conversations
all day, yeah.
Outside of this podcast, and we could just keep talking and talking. Any final words of wisdom or amazement to share with the audience today?
I think that, I mean, the negotiation piece is really, really, really important, but I wouldn't be where I am without the mentors that I had. It was not my pure grit. It was not my pure natural knowledge, network, anything. I worked so hard to get the right mentors who had already been where I wanted to go and surrounded myself with them, as you were saying, like that support system. And I truly, truly, truly credit where I am now to these people. You can absolutely outgrow mentors. So that's another thing that we could talk about all day too. But I think that slow build of having the right people in your corner willing to help support. And I had one mentor years ago who helped me get my manufacturer and they were personally liable for things. And I was like, why did you do that? And they said, Kat, someone helped us. And all that we asked is that you pay it forward one day. And so here I am.
I love that. And I think that's such an important piece is the mentorship, paying it forward too. I mean, we're all here to help each other. And when we do that, it makes the world better. I mean, honestly, I know that sounds kind of cheesy, but it really does. I think we're all in this together. Let's support each other however we can. Again, I could talk to you forever about this, and I definitely want to have you back to talk more about this amazing entrepreneurial journey and supporting it. Where can people find you?
Yes. So founders can apply for our programs at power2pitch.com. And I'm super active on LinkedIn. I share daily pitch tips, founder resources, grant opportunities at Kat, K-A-T Weaver, W-E-A-V-E-R. And those are the two best places to find us.
And we will have all of that in the show notes as well. Kat, thank you so much for joining today. Such a pleasure.
I am so honored to be here. So thanks again for having me.
Thank you all for being here. Appreciate your time. And until the next episode, bye for now. Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support this podcast, please hit subscribe, leave a rating and review, share it with others, or post about it on social media. For show notes, links, to connect with guests and more, visit us at corporate-expat.com. And be sure to catch the next episode with more insights and inspiration to support your corporate expat experience. Bye for now.